Good morning. Our third and final case for the day, 2023-0216, in the matter of Craig Quarter versus Ohio Edison Company. On behalf of the appellant, Mr. Vonderheit. Good morning. Thank you for joining us for off-site court.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chief Justice, and may it please the court. I'm Jim Vonderheit from Benesch Friedlander, along with Denise Hasbrook of the Retzel Firm. We represent appellant Public Utility Ohio Edison. If I may, I'd like to reserve 4 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, this is a case about a list, an agreed list. Under the formal document negotiated in 1948, there are 12 things my client, the utility, can do on Appalee's property. These 12 things are as follows. They're listed in the key sentence: inspect, operate, replace, repair, patrol, maintain, enter and leave, trim, cut, remove. This is a list of overlapping rights broadly stated, each serving the purpose of the easement, which is public safety, reliability of the grid, the safety of Appalee's land. The parties had those purposes in common. They're clear on the face of the document. And none of these verbs, none of these 12 items, specifies a method for exercise of the right. No methods are ruled out. The concepts overlap, but each word is there for a reason. For each verb under Ohio law, the utility has the right to use the best methods identified by its experts, subject to PUC oversight.
What gives them that right?
The language of the sentence, Your Honor. The sentence is there to give these 12 rights.
But you just said that there are no methods specified.
Correct.
So what gives the utility the right to use any method that they want or choose or is recommended?
The document itself gives the rights. The constraints are in place in a number of other modes, but the right is given by the word remove in this instance. The word remove is a common word, and under this court's precedent, a common word is given its ordinary meaning unless the appellees show manifest absurdity. Buckeye Pipeline gives us that rule and gives us the result in this case. Removal includes elimination and getting rid of things. That's the holding of Hewitt. It's every dictionary that anyone's looked at. And when you have these dictionary definitions available, those ordinary meanings are given, again, unless there is manifest absurdity or some contrary meaning shown on the face of the document or from the overall contents of the easement.
Doesn't this case really boil down to a comma? Because the question about right to trim, comma, cut, no comma, and remove, and there are two thoughts, whether we just look at it the way it is today or whether we try to look at it the way it was defined in 1948. Where do you stand on that?
Happily, Your Honor, the comma doesn't matter. These issues boil down to how does the sentence read? Is there a clearly best reading of the sentence? And the comma makes no difference. There's no way to read trim, cut, and remove as anything but three parts of that 12-part list.
I think your colleagues in the opposing side are saying because there's not an extra comma after between cut and the word and some rules of style would say three or more things in a series, you need to put that comma before the conjunction, which is and. So they're saying it's trim and remove and cut and remove, period.
They have sometimes said that, Your Honor, and the lower courts have said that. I don't understand appellees to necessarily be saying that. It's an interpretation they say could be there, but the bulk of their brief is elsewhere, and there's good reason for that. Under that reading, you couldn't make sense of the word obstructions, right? If you have to trim and remove an obstruction, what do you do with a kite? What do you do with a hornet's nest? If you have to cut and remove or trim and remove, the word obstruction is out of place. And so, that sentence doesn't make sense in that,
so,
in that
so
reading.
So why is it that Ohio Edison didn't start using herbicide until 2017?
Because of the vegetation in this case, and these are issues addressed by Mr. Maldonado's and the other arborists' report, the vegetation in this case has clearly gotten to the point where it grows back fast and tall, and cutting is worse under the technology as it's now understood. The vegetation management plan that the PUCO approved mandates and sets forth best management practices, industry rationales. All those things in compliance with the vegetation management plan now dictate that the targeted use of herbicide and the encouragement of compatible vegetation is now called for. This is not herbicide that's about killing or indiscriminate destruction. This is about removing the plants that, in the judgment of the grantee, as the easement says, are threats to the line.
So was there expert testimony in the record about the claims of the quarters that the herbicide would somehow seep into the water supply, which I assume is an underground well?
Your Honor, there is quite a bit of testimony as to that. It's uncontroverted, in fact. I'm not sure where appellees have actually made that case, that there's any danger whatsoever. I'm not sure their opinions are in the record to that effect. But what is in the record is all the experts, Mr. Maldonado, Mr. Quattrochi.
And experts for them.
They don't have any experts, Your Honor. The appellee's expert testimony is missing because they didn't put any forward. They say the contract wins in the case. We say that ordinary reading of the sentence loses the case because the document is clear in favor of Ohio Edison's reading, which is also the reading that protects the public safety and the reliability of the grid. As to the danger question, Mr. Quattrochi is very clear on this issue. The herbicides are encapsulated into the plant. There is no risk, no appreciable risk, according to all the experts, of anything affecting the quarter's property.
Because the herbicides are sprayed on the leaves.
The way they're applied across the board, there's a variety of methods, but in each case, there is no risk, according to Mr. Quattrochi, who took the carefully built plan that was created by Mr. Maldonado, analyzed it, and said this is not a threat. There is no danger here. And the preconceptions, the intuitions of the quarters, whatever they might be, or of the Common Pleas Court, do not step over that and say, you know, this doesn't seem right. Of course, there are those to whom it may not seem right. The General Assembly has put those kinds of questions in the hands of the PUCO, so that instead of 88 Common Pleas Courts creating a patchwork of ways of interpreting easements or ways of adjudicating methods, the PUCO will decide those questions, and appellees like the quarters have their recourse and their remedy to impose reasonableness, which is not the standard that the easement sets. The easement says whatever's best.
So my question is you're not really removing, though. Maybe I'm confused, and maybe I misread the record, but you're not removing. All you're doing is spraying what's remaining of the tree to stop the new volunteers or the suckers from sprouting out. So you're not really removing anything.
That is, under this court's precedent, actually removal, and that's how the dictionary works in this case, simply to say eliminate. We're getting rid of the vegetative threat. Once the grantee's judgment is addressed that this plant is threatening the lines, removal of that plant is removing the threat. And the herbicides are designed to remove the threat and to clear out the incompatible vegetation. The goal is that the compatible vegetation then fills in and you don't have to do it over and over. Mr. Quattrochi's testimony is unrebutted that cutting is worse. Cutting is a worse method. It's more intrusive to the landowners, and the plants grow back thicker and fuller.
Under the language of the easement, could the utility trim or cut and not remove?
The easement creates no right for the landowner to mandate a certain level of service. In other places, if there is damage done to the land, the landowner has rights.
So you're saying if they trim, let's say they trim branches, et cetera,
yes,
and left them there.
Yes, and there are cases where that would be unreasonable. The easement wouldn't forbid it because the PUCO would. And this is an important practical matter for any court to consider. What is going to prevent disastrous abuse by the utility? There are many answers to that, and the clearest one is set forth by the General Assembly under 4905.26. You have your day in court. You can say this is unreasonable. The easement gives them the right to leave these branches there, but they can't do it because it's unreasonable in my case. In many cases, leaving the branches there is highly reasonable, and the vegetation management plan approved by the PUCO under the administrative code shows that under the industry standards for remote areas where the vegetation that's cut or left behind is actually going to be helpful either to the land and the environment or to the landowners who benefit from the firewood. You have to remember in 1948, landowners weren't often in the business of saying, please come take my timber. Please take it away. I'd like this wood gone. The wood, if this was all about carrying things away rather than preventing threats to the lines, then you might imagine landowners signing a document that says, please take away my firewood. That's not what the easement is for. Other parts of the easement and other bodies of law are to protect the landowners.
So what you just told us is in the record, correct?
The vegetation management plan, Your Honor?
No, in 1948, the desires of the landowners at the time who had easements.
I was talking about landowners in general, and in a more rural time, these documents were created not to give utilities firewood lumber removal rights. I was all I was saying about easements in general. There's nothing in the record about the negotiation here, and that's important because easements are different from other contracts. The three rules that the courts were called upon to use were easement rules for this case. When on remand, this court sent this easement down to be interpreted, there were three bodies of Ohio law to draw on, and the three rules are quite clear. What we have on the other side essentially is improvisation that doesn't quite work grammatically. It doesn't work grammatically or practically. The law points in a very clear direction. Under the rule of Buckeye Pipeline, the burden is on appellees to show manifest absurdity. Otherwise, the common word remove is given its ordinary meaning. Second, the second rule in the same direction is much older. It's from the 1840s. It's the rule of Potter versus Burns. In that case, it was clear that easements as perpetual property rights are construed against the grantor. They're construed in favor of the party receiving the rights because those rights last forever. No one is going to be there to explain them in the future and say, oh, I didn't mean to give this right or that right. I used a broad word, but I didn't mean all the definitions of that word. I just meant the first two definitions. No. Easements, being read forever, have to have in the document any constraint. And that's the rule from 1846. It's also codified now under a revised code, it's on the next page. 5302.04. This is well-established Ohio law. The third rule is also well-established, although this court has not promulgated it. It's a direct corollary to the other rules, and it follows directly from them. Modern advancements are allowed. This is clearly laid out in Crane Hollow, which is a case about helicopter patrolling, right? We have a patrol right here. The right to patrol includes helicopter patrolling, even though that document was written in 1915. Any of these three rules would have gotten to the right result. Instead, the lower court used a rule that the appellees have rightly abandoned. So we have the text here, and Ohio Edison submits the Seventh District's ruling should be reversed. I'll reserve the remainder of my time. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Anderson, good morning. Thank you for agreeing to be at off-site court.
Thank you. Chief Justice and other justices of the Ohio Supreme Court, may it please the court, my name is Nicholas Anderson, and I, along with my co-counsel, Chuck Kidder, represent the appellees. Sorry. Well, here we are again. In quarter one, this court determined that the easement at issue was a private contract subject to interpretation by an Ohio trial court and not the PUCO. Upon remand, the trial court ruled that the phrase, quote, trim, comma, cut and remove, end quote, did not include the right to spray poisons on our client's properties. Now, the appellate court took a slightly different direction, the Seventh District, and we're not saying they're wrong, but we have never argued that this language is ambiguous. We think this language is unambiguous. And we think, as Justice Stewart pointed out, I believe in her comments, that the utility is not permitted to simply walk in, cut down a tree, and leave it there. They're not permitted to remove cut vegetation down and just leave it in the easement. I believe earlier that opposing counsel said The comma doesn't matter. And I think I heard an audible gasp from some of the teachers in the room. The comma does matter. The phrase trim, comma, cut, and remove means trim, remove, cut, remove.
So that is nonsensical, right? Trim, remove. If the comma doesn't matter, then how do you get trim, remove?
The comma does matter.
Okay, the comma matters. How do you get trim, remove? Those are two separate things.
Because of the way the sentence is structured, it's trim, remove, cut, remove.
Well, so I would hope if that is your reading that any grammar teacher would certainly gasp because.
Well, I think the opposing counsel talked about.
How do you get the word cut out of that sentence? Trim and remove. You just excised a word.
So remove means to take away. So.
Or it means to eradicate.
Well, under a 2022 definition from a dictionary.
If you look at the 1947 Webster's eradicate.
Where it says see also, it's not part of the definition in the 1947 definitions or 48 definitions that were provided.
Well, that is part of the definition.
So eradicate is one of the see also's, like a thesaurus.
Well, that's not exactly the way the dictionary works, right? It's not like a thesaurus. It's part of the definition in the dictionary.
At the very end, there is a see also. I'll agree that that's what it says, but it says see also, eradicate, I believe assassinate was brought up at one point in time in these arguments at the last argument. But obviously, we're reading an easement here, a private contract between parties, where in 1948 or 47, the landman would have come along and said, hey, we're from the Friendly Public Utility Company. We're going to put in an easement. We're going to come in. We're going to trim. We're going to cut. And then we're going to remove the stuff off your lawn, off your easement, off your right-of-way, along your farmland. They wouldn't have been saying, we're going to assassinate it or we're going to eradicate it. They're going to remove it from the property.
Let me ask it this way. Could the utility come in and dig up the tree roots or the bush roots, you know, eliminate them and just leave them there?
No.
Could they dig them up?
Yes, if they replace the...
Well, where's that under cut, trim, cut?
So that would be under cut. You would have to cut the roots. We actually...
No, you shovel it. I've taken out trees
Shovels. So we've taken out a gigantic hole.
Yeah.
Okay, so the hole the size of a tree with all of its roots.
Yeah, or a bush, a little bush.
Okay, we would call that trimming or cutting.
You're not cutting.
You're cutting the ground to get down to the bottom of the tree.
Oh, okay.
You're disturbing the land.
Well, what about?
But you're only allowed to trim and cut trees, limbs, and underbrush and other obstructions. The dirt's not an obstruction.
So we're getting a little, in my opinion.
No, I'm asking because herbicide does the same thing.
So the one thing that I was thinking was if they had a laser gun like from Star Trek and they were able to shoot the tree and it disappears, right? Obviously, we would think that's dangerous under the reading of the statute or under the reading of our easement. However, that's not what we're dealing with here. What we're dealing with here is they're wanting to spray pesticides. They've admitted in the record that sometimes they have to spray these obstructions multiple times, 3, 4, 5, and that sometimes it doesn't kill them. They're not removing, they're not trimming, they're not cutting.
Let's look at Mr. Vanderheide's position that it's really about the removing is about preventing threats, not necessarily taking anything away. So they are removing the threat to the lines as opposed to removing the dead vegetation or the cut limbs or the cut branches. What about that interpretation?
So I think that the prior history of what happened here matters in that situation, Your Honor, because for 80 years, they were able to trim, cut, and remove vegetation very easily. And then all of a sudden, several years ago, grass started to grow faster. Weeds started to grow faster, apparently. And therefore, they need this extra vegetative control method. But it isn't trim, cutting, and removing the obstruction, okay? There are other ways to do it that fit within the definitions they've provided for vegetative maintenance within the easement.
If we were to fine in favor of your client, would that prevent Ohio Edison from ever using herbicides?
No, Your Honor. That's a great question, though. Ohio Edison has the right of eminent domain. This is a stick in the bundle of sticks that property rights are made of. Ohio Edison can come to our clients, ask for an additional language to the easement, which they add to all their current easements, other vegetative management, we've all seen that in the record. Or if our client does not want to give them those rights, they can file an eminent domain action, have a court determine whether it's necessary, and a jury determine what the value of that stick in the bundle of sticks is worth. They did not negotiate or get that stick here. They do not have the right to spray herbicides. Now, the other thing I wanted to note for the court is that due to the ruling in quarter one, we kind of have an interesting interplay of what's going on here. Counsel mentioned in his opening argument that, or in his earlier argument, that simply a landowner with this kind of language, if they started to use napalm or nuclear materials to clear weeds or fire, that they could simply go to the PUCO and complain. However, if this court rules in favor of Ohio Edison under this easement language, it's gonna kind of forestall that ability because this court's already ruled that is a question of contract interpretation that the trial court is supposed to deal with. And I think that a ruling in favor of Ohio Edison here actually sets the precedent that if they use vague language in easements, they can do anything they want, and the landowner has no recourse. And so I just want to make sure that we're all very careful when we're looking at this case. And I know that with Justice Fisher, the trim, cut, remove with the pulling the tree out of the ground, I knew you were going to ask me that. It's been a year and a half since you asked me that the first time. And I...
You didn't answer it then either.
I could. It's just one of those things that doesn't happen that way, but I do understand where you're coming from. And like I said, I thought the laser gun analogy, and I was thinking, you know...
Well, let's talk fire, okay? Can you trim with fire?
Can you trim a what?
With fire. Burn trim with fire.
If the easement says so, yes.
So if they use fire to trim, that's okay.
I mean, I think what we're talking about is like a flamethrower controlled burn that goes really fast, like napalm.
Yeah.
If that says trim,
trim.
They're not removing it, so we're completely obliterating it.
Yeah. You're just getting rid of
it. It's vanishing.
Yeah.
I would say that you make a very good and impossible argument, but very good, Your Honor.
So... That's removing, though, isn't it?
Not if you completely obliterate it. You aren't carrying it
off. Okay, we'll say they obliterate it with a napalm bomb.
So, if you're going to call that trimming...
I'm not. I'm going to just say they take a piece of some napalm and throw it on your easement.
So, I don't think that fits the definition of trim, cut, and remove as it would have existed in 1947.
It's not there afterwards.
So, it's obliterated. It's not
obliterated,
removed.
It's gone.
Okay. I mean, I think that you could make any number of scenarios like that where you can start to make the argument, but in reality, that's not what's going on here. They're trying to spray chemicals.
Right.
Something we can see.
Napalm's a chemical.
Something we can understand. You're correct. If they were suggesting napalm, we'd be making the same argument.
Okay.
But are we, I mean, we still would need to get back to Crane Hollow where the easement has to be done in a manner that permits the dominant estate to carry out its purpose. I'm not sure napalm would help that.
I don't think it would. Yeah. I agree with that.
So I guess what I'm saying is if we have to apply that in interpreting how the easement can be exercised, you probably couldn't do napalm, right?
I don't think napalm should be, napalm does not benefit the servience of state. Estate. The idea of napalm is just as ridiculous to me as the idea as pesticides. That the cancer-causing ability of them, the client with COPD. So when we're using a word like napalm, we think that's more ridiculous than pesticides, but I don't think so. I think it causes the same type of, it wasn't around in 1947, 48. It's not in trim, cut, and remove or any other words in that easement. And it doesn't benefit the estate.
So why didn't you put any evidence of that in the record, of the harmful nature that this proposed? Your opponents seem to suggest that it's all speculation.
Everyone sitting here today knows it's not. And there is no expert testimony at this point from our end because this was decided on summary judgment and went back and forth between whether it was going to be PUCO or not. So we have landowners. So if that's going to be the burden that we're going to have in a trial court, that a landowner trying to defend an easement going up against First Energy has to hire experts to defend whether or not pesticides get sprayed on their land, which we know cause cancer from
herbicides.
Poison.
You're saying pesticides.
Herbicides.
Thank you.
Sorry, poison. I meant to call it poison. That basically we did not get to the point where we provided expert testimony that herbicides, thank you, Your Honor, cause cancer. You're correct. We did not do that.
Would your opponents have evidence in the record that suggests that it's not harmful?
I don't believe they have anything in the record that it's not harmful, but I don't think it really became an issue for the court at the trial court level. I think I'm out of time, so if there are no more questions, we would just ask that the court affirm the Seventh District, but really affirm the trial court and or put its judgment within. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Mr. Vonderheit, you still have 2 minutes and 7 seconds remaining.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think you're seeing the implications of a elimination of these three rules. If this court were to say it's fine to ignore Buckeye Pipeline, it's fine to ignore the much older rule of Potter versus Burns, these special rules that apply to easements, yes, they're private contracts. Yes, they're negotiated between the parties. They're also public documents. People need to be able to rely on these documents for posterity. A landowner knows that he or she is signing a document to last forever. It is a formal document. And under Ohio law, easements are read a certain way, not to constrain the future right, not to say, oh, is this absolutely necessary now or in a certain era, but to say what language was chosen. If the parties agreed upon vague language, that's very different from eminent domain imposing vague language without a finding of necessity, a court imposing vague language. This is the language the parties chose. The parties agreed that there would be a removal right. The only question before the court is whether remove is given its ordinary meaning. Appellees had the burden to show manifest absurdity. They didn't need an expert. We have experts to show why this is not leading to bad results. And the Quattrochi report, I would commend to you, explaining clearly why the intuitions that Appellees counsel is drawing on are not here in this case. The idea of danger, the idea of harm are not present. And strongly want to separate my position from that that Appellee's counsel laid out. The PUCO has jurisdiction to address those downstream questions.
So I want to ask you one final question. And you know, there's this whole new line of thinking that when we're interpreting statutes or constitutional provisions, we need to go back to what was the thinking at the time that it was drafted. So has anybody gone back and looked at what the grammar rules were for legal documents in 1948? As far back as I could go is the AP style manual, which was really for newspapers who like to save space by eliminating commas. So, I mean, has anybody looked at that issue?
Thank you, Your Honor. I see my time is up, if I might just address this question. We can look at this issue right here and right now by looking at the document the parties created. Time after time in that document, the Oxford comma is omitted. If the comma matters, if the comma does something special, nobody told the parties in 1948 who created this document. Whatever a style guide might say, all the style guides would be split, as they have always been. The Oxford comma is a matter of debate. That is not decisive in deciding this case. The comma doesn't matter. And if it did, somebody should have told the parties, because they all agreed we don't need that comma in any of our lists in this document. So in light of the language of the document, which controls and grants a property interest to promote the purpose of the easement, the Seventh District should be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll receive a decision from the court. Marshall, please close the court. Be careful.
All rise.